Welcome to the Mass Construction Show. I'm your host, Joe Kelly. This is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. You will hear that I am driving. A lot of probably audio issues with today's podcast, so just a little heads up. I sound like dog poop, I'll be polite. And Scott sounds a little bit better, but I think my connection was lousy, so forgive me on this one. Try and bear with it. Hopefully you can slog your way through it, and I think it's worth it. Scott is back. Scott is going to go through some interesting articles that affect the construction and real estate development market. My hope is to have Scott in on a regular basis and hit the things that matter to you. So today we'll talk about a project coming in Lynn, a land deal in Everett, housing around public transportation in Newton, and what's the kind of politics happening there, repairs needed to the existing MBTA that are some extremely large dollars. So all that should be very interesting. Bear with the audio, and I think you will find it worth it. Today's show is brought to you by Central Commercial Carpenters and supporters of our conversation. Enjoy the show. Hey, Scott, welcome to Mass Construction Show.
Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to have you back. First episode, people seem to really enjoy. They're excited about hearing kind of on a more regular basis, and that's what we're going to do today. What is new in development, construction, and politics? And it's been interesting to see how they all integrate, and I think some of the topics we're going to cover today will show how they do indeed all integrate.
Yes, that sounds great.
So the first story that I'd like to hit on was, you know, you had one episode that was kind of a trifecta for construction that was talking about a lawsuit for a construction company. I think yes. The MBTA, big dollars that needed to be spent. And interesting to me was a project in Lynn. And the headline for it was Warning Shot, one of Boston's most successful developers is looking to the North Shore for his latest mega project. What's that story?
That is about Steve Samuels. He's a Boston mega developer. He's the one who's really kind of spearheaded the revival of all the, you know, the kind of neighborhood around Fenway Park, which was always, you know, kind of a mixed bag, you know, dives and souvenir stands. And he's kind of really turned it into a kind of the hottest neighborhood in the city. Lots of residential projects, I think some. Maybe some lab thrown in there, high rises, you know, so it's a different neighborhood than it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Mm. And he's kind of been a major player in that. He's also behind the South Bay project in Dorchester and rolled that out. Well, now he's looking at Lynn, and which might be surprising to some people because, you know, Lynn is, you know, it's a kind of post-industrial city. It's had its struggles, but it's starting to pick up, and they're starting to see some development opportunities. And he's looking at a project right on the waterfront there for $450 million, a large residential project with some restaurant commercial space on the bottom.
What jumped out at me is that price tag on it, a $450 million project. So we're talking about something that we're normally seeing in Boston, in a major city. That price tag is huge. It would probably be around, I don't know where it would be if it was
$800 billion, $1 billion. Yeah, it could probably be a lot more in Boston. And that's probably, I think, one of the draws. I mean, also there's available 8 acres on the waterfront. You know, that's a real opportunity. And the potential warning shot is, you know, that choosing to now focus on Lynn as opposed to Boston, where there's been some friction between the mayor of Boston and developers over new requirements that they cost a lot more money to make Boston building more expensive. And Lynn seems to be pitching herself as a maybe easier place to get things done and with lots of, you know, opportunities to build.
Yeah, and that kind of coincides with, you know, probably 3 years ago now, I had Mike Procopio on for the first time I had him on was to talk about his Lynn project. And Procopio Companies built a 10-story high-rise in downtown Lynn. And what was interesting is when they first approached Lynn, they had a much more scaled down version. The mayor at the time, who's not the mayor now, said, you know what? No, we want a high rise. Come back. We want a bigger project. So it's interesting to see a community say, hey, we want you to build.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it's extremely rare. So they ended up building a 10-story building. They weren't even going to have a high-rise, period. So it must have been 6 stories or 4 or 5 stories they were looking for. They ended up coming back with 10. They said, we want no parking, no affordable. This project is going to have affordable, but Procopio was saying, you know, it was just such an easy permitting process there. And I think, you know, you've spoken a bit about how, you know, Lynn's hoping to kind of streamline everything, get the all the agencies to work together. And it seems like they're making that happen, and they're looking at 850 units. You know, pushing 1,000 units really moves the needle. And I think a lot of communities would jump at that with that opportunity, right?
Yeah, yes. It's a big deal, and it's happening. You know, it looks like maybe he's trying to get it off the ground in a reasonable time frame, and at a time when things are, you know, have stalled or bogged down in other Boston and some other cities. And the mayor there, yes, has made a point to try to get all the department heads together and have them all kind of meet with, you know, developers and try to get everybody on the same page so there's not dueling. You know, the parking department says this, and, you know, the development department says that, and then you're waiting months for a resolution, and they're trying to cut through some of that. So it is a more streamlined process there than maybe, you know, what's happening in other cities.
Yeah. And I think, was it on Contrarian Boston that I read? This sounds like a setup, but I honestly don't remember if this is where I read it. But was it Davis Companies just bought some acreage in Everett?
Yeah, well, I wrote a note on it, but the Globe reported that. But yeah, they bought big acreage up in Everett, and so they're looking at, just interesting as well. You know, that land is a little more difficult. I think it needs a lot of remediation, but it's definitely an interesting long-term play. So we're starting to see maybe kind of the development, you know, of Suffolk Downs, starting to see kind of the development rippling out to encompass, you know, neighborhoods, areas that have been neglected for many years.
Yeah, so maybe the outside of Boston, Cambridge, Somerville, now we're starting to just reach into other communities and see projects of the scale that used to be only
just in Boston or Somerville or Cambridge. Yes.
Yeah. So super exciting. You also reported on Newton giving the green light to a housing plan, and it goes back to what we talked about in the last one where there was, I think it's called the MBTA Communities Act or something like that, where the state is pretty much requiring higher density around transportation.
Yeah.
You know, but you said Newton gives the green light to housing, but it insists on these provisions that could make it unbuildable. So what's happening there?
Newton has agreed to, has finished its plan to meet these requirements the state has for they require communities with, you know, T-stops, near T-stops, transit stops to build, you know, zone for much more housing near these areas. So it's submitting a plan that's going to be, you know, zoning for theoretically 8,000 or more units. So that's a big step in the right direction. The downside is that they've put in some conditions on, you know, crime ground floor uses, capping heights at 2.5 to 4.5 stories, maybe 4 stories. So that could make it more difficult, you know, for developers to get financing. Also some affordability requirements. If you add all those things up, it might be harder to actually build these projects.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how there's kind of a game, you know, on the surface, it seems like progress, but when you really dig in, it took 3 years to get to this point. Kind of a drag their feet. And then once we get there, that, you know, it says 2.5 to 4.5, but really that's 4 stories. I don't know how much you're doing on a half story for units. And then you subtract out the first floor because you're not getting the housing there. They're requiring commercial. And then they have some requirements for what they call the low market rate, which is affordable units. Yep. So that's maybe another swath of that project that isn't making money or isn't really that profitable. That would not make money. The commercial might be just less profitable. And now you're looking for that smaller amount of units to carry the whole load of the project to make it work. And it seems like those parameters could really push out or make it a struggle to make the numbers work and make these things actually happen. So all this effort, and maybe we don't see the results we're hoping for.
Yes. I think that's some of the issues that is cropping up with this MBTA Communities Plan, which the state and Governor Healey are really relying on to try to solve the housing crisis. And it's like, you know, wanting, you know, demanding the perfect, you know, housing development, a perfect plan, and putting so many conditions on that. Yeah, it looks great on paper, but it never gets built. And sometimes you have to wonder, well, is that the purpose? Or maybe some officials are looking into this, going into these planning sessions or negotiations, feeling that the housing is an imposition on its own, and the only way we're going to agree to it is we get all the things we want, and maybe not stepping back and realizing that you just need more housing, and you may not be able to do it in just the perfect way that you want it, or with all these bells and whistles, it's just not going to happen if nothing gets built.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of the perfect being the enemy of good.
Yes.
Yeah, and to go back to what we said early on, which is politics driving development, or crushing development in this case.
Sure. Yeah, it's every, you know, often development projects are kind of mini political campaigns, and developers hire consultants that work in the political sphere to try to win over support in the community, and opponents kind of use their own political tactics to try to rally people against it. So they do become kind of micro political campaigns.
Yeah, I was going to say, you used the right word, campaign. Big Dig 2, T says it will take $24.5 billion with a B to repair the nation's worst rapid transit system. What's happening? What's happening with the T?
Yeah, so with the T, the T came out, and under the new general manager, Philip Ng, came out with an estimate that grabbed headlines, or definitely grabbed attention, or got a lot of media attention, because it was so big. I mean, $24 billion, that's the size of what we paid for the Big Dig. It's about the same cost as it was to, you know, build the channel between England and France. It's a big number, but I thought it was encouraging. We thought it was encouraging because it does seem like maybe the T is trying to be a little more honest to the public of what the challenges are and what the costs will be. And that's important, as opposed to constantly trying to downplay the numbers or say everything's fine or just one more repair. And then when it turns out it's, you know, just not one more repair, you have, you know, a cycle of people being disillusioned and upset. And maybe it's better just to face it honestly. Now, interestingly enough, we thought that was a pretty big number, but there's other people saying, well, no, it's even bigger than that. So who knows?
Mm. And the last thing I wanted to chat about is every so often you do a little thing where you have your original content that's done by Contrarian Boston, but then you'll also do some quick hits where it's a nice little 3, 4, 5
sure.
articles that, hey, if you're interested in this type of content, then these articles might be for you. And one that jumped out at me was one by, what was it, Bloomberg?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Bloomberg, and it got into what they kind of called tax sensitivity, if that's the right word. What was that article?
Yeah, I looked at all these major cities and ranked them on, given that we're seeing a downturn in the commercial real estate market, largely based on, or much of it based on, the shift to remote work that's emptied out offices, that's causing a downward spiral in values of many buildings, which in turn will mean lower valuations, will mean lower tax bills and less revenue for cities. And so they ranked cities on the basis of how vulnerable they are to this commercial real estate downturn that we're seeing, you know, combination of existing buildings declining in value or going to take a hit, probably fewer buildings over the next few years getting built because there's going to be less demand. And Boston was, and Atlanta are at the top of the list in vulnerability, because Boston gets, I think, 75% of its revenue, a very large number, from property taxes, and from those office buildings they're a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
Office towers downtown.
So I'm a little lucky, I have the chart in front of me. So yeah. And what went into that sensitivity rating was percentage of tax for government revenue of property tax, the assessed value of commercial property, or percentage of assessed value for commercial property. And then that comes up with that index. And property tax percentage of government revenue for Boston is 64%. The next closest is San Francisco at 41%. And then there's, you know, communities like Denver and District of Columbia, which are still high, but they're only 19%. So we're counting on so much from,
yes,
from property tax standpoint. And then even the assessed value of is 29% coming from commercial. So there's a heavy implication that if that tax base comes down, what does that mean for city services, presumably?
I mean, at some point, because now you have the cost of city services is going up. City just did a big deal with the police union. They did the firefighters before. Other unions are going to, agreements are coming out. So the those costs are going up. And at the same time, new development is looking like it's going to be declining for a while. So that means you have less new buildings coming on, creating new revenue that's coming in. And you have existing buildings that are declining in value as well. So those are the stuff. There's a lag time in between when the market shift happens and when you see the revenue decline of a year or two. And that's probably what we're seeing now, or, you know, we're seeing the problem. And then it's going to take a couple of years to play out where then you're going to see declining revenues and then, you know, having to deal with it on the city side, you know, in terms of services and what they can provide and not provide.
Yeah. And I know I was a little all over the map when I was describing that, but the long story short there is that we were the only major city with percentage of revenue greater than 50% coming from property tax.
And, yes,
and not just north of 50, we're at 64% coming from property taxes. So when we see those values come down, property taxes come down, and we potentially have a big problem. And that's what Bloomberg was saying, was how sensitive we are to taxes. And Boston is number one on that list. And,
yes,
you know, as far as a percentage of revenue from taxes, the next closest is San Francisco at 41. So,
yes,
it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yes, definitely. Have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Right. Scott, as always, like, great stuff. Keep pumping out the excellent content.
Thank you so much. Keep going with the podcast. It's great. It's really great issues here. So I appreciate you taking the time and inviting me on.
Yep. And if people are interested in reading these articles, like I am, head over to Contrarian Boston, the Substack,
yep,
and subscribe and take a look at what Scott is talking.
Well, thank you so much, and it's good to talk to you.
Awesome.
And thanks for having me on the podcast.
Take care, Scott.
You too.